Well, what a week. I mean, I guess what a day. If you are the, I was just kind of joking right before the break, the idea that on your first day, you figure out where you get a swipe card, maybe get some coffee, figure out, who's who, where your desk is, all that, figure your outlook. But for David Calhoun, the CEO of Boeing, boy, oh boy, this is his first day, and it comes a tumultuous time at Boeing, not just to clean up the mess that's the Boeing MAX, but just at the end of last week, instant message communications, others were released as part of an investigation that showed that a lot of the Boeing employees perhaps allegedly were misleading the FAA and how safe the Boeing MAX was. David Shaper covers aviation for NPR, and he is in studio. David, great to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too. Thanks for having me in.
I mean, this is what a day to start. I mean, it couldn't be more poorly timed to start your new tenure as CEO after this news comes
Well,
out.
I actually think it was deliberate. I think that they wanted to release these things. First of all, David Calhoun, it was announced, what was it, 2 days before Christmas that they fired Dennis Muilenburg, the previous CEO. David Calhoun was chairman of the board at the time, had a big role in pushing him out. And in fact, people had seen this kind of coming for a couple of months. Those who know the company, he's been on the board for 10 years. And from what I'm hearing now, he wanted the company to release
He wanted it
these
all on the old
communications.
guys,
He wanted
so,
it all.
yeah.
Well, he just wanted it out there. He's like, let's not do this anymore in dribs and drabs. Let's get it out there. Let's confront some of the mistakes that we've made, although I don't know that he's actually admitted mistakes. Others have. And it just is, let's try to move on. Let's start fresh on Monday. All that other stuff came out Thursday and Friday, so
All right, well,
we'll see.
We'll
I
see.
mean,
Let's get into, before we get into Calhoun's tenure and what we can expect from him as the head of Boeing, what happened on Thursday and Friday? If I wasn't paying attention to news, what came out?
So, first of all, Boeing had been asked by the two congressional committees. There's a Senate committee and a House committee investigating the circumstances of the 737 MAX crashes. And really, what their focus is, because of what our government can and can't do, is how was this plane certified by the FAA, and what was happening behind the scenes in the years they were developing the plane and in the years the FAA was taking it. So those committees said, "You guys got to give us all your documents. Come on, dump it." And they didn't. So little things have come out. There was a big document dump in October that surprised some people that had what one committee chairman said was the smoking gun of showing that they knew that there were problems with this MCAS system in the plane long before it had been approved. And these latest documents show a real concerted effort on the behalf of key Boeing employees to, first of all, from going back into 2013 when they were developing this plane, is we're going to have this system, but we don't want the FAA to know about it. We don't want customers to know about it, because if they do, they'll know it's significantly different, and that means that they're going to require pilot training in a simulator, which is expensive, which Airbus is not doing with their newest plane. So in order to be competitive, in order to be attractive to the airlines, we can't have simulator training, because that's just going to add to the costs, and it's just not going to be as successful of a plane from a financial point of view. And so there are notes from meetings back in 2013. There are all kinds of emails back and forth and text, internal messages back and forth between some of these key employees about how, one of the test pilots, the chief test pilot, is talking about Jedi mind tricking the regulators. Often he uses that phrase often, just like how he kind of basically pulled the wool over their eyes and convinced them that this plane really wasn't that different from the previous version of the 737. So therefore, there weren't any significant new training protocols needed. But at the same time, there are other employees in some of these messages raising red flags. Hey, we've got problems in the simulator. One guy calls it, he's like, I can't see how the FAA is going to pass this turd. That's what he calls the 737 MAX.
Oh, my.
Another calls that, I'm trying to remember some of the words. It's just, a plane that was designed by clowns and who are supervised by monkeys. This is some of the terminology.
What
that
repercussions
use.
Does any of this information have? I mean, obviously, there's public opinion and what people think of the company, but in terms of regulators, in terms of the FAA, is there anything to be done? Because this just sounds so damning.
Well, there is a Justice Department, maybe a couple of different Justice Department investigations, criminal probes, looking into whether or not there was malfeasance and fraud and actual crimes committed in the development and certification of this aircraft. That process is going on. At the same time, these more public investigations are, so we really don't know what they found in terms of criminal evidence of crimes being committed. But at the same time, I mean, it is an embarrassment for Boeing. I find it interesting that, I mean, Boeing's known about these documents for a while. They just decided to release them now. But now they're saying, oh, we're going to hold these people accountable. There may be disciplinary action against some of these employees who are doing these messages. Some of them have already left the company, so there's nothing they could do about that. But why did you take disciplinary action at the time you first saw these messages? You know, like maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, or at least a few months ago.
Right.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. One of the most troubling things, Justin, that I found in these all these messages is that one airline in particular was not begging, but they were really like, you know, we understand that this plane seems similar to the previous 737.
But something's off, right.
But we want our pilots to get simulator training. Can't you do that? And Boeing pushes back, and the Boeing official is basically, what are you guys, basically embarrassing them and just say calling them out and bullying them and saying, you can't do this. Think of the precedent it would set. Look at all these other airlines. They don't have a problem with it. Why do you guys have a problem with it? You know, there's all this back and forth.
Jeez.
That airline was Lion Air. That was the first. They had the crew that flew the plane that had the first crash. And immediately after, what was Boeing doing? Pilot error. It was the pilot's fault. And
wow.
That, to me, is just appalling, that they would take that stance. Here is an airline practically begging to get their pilots trained in a simulator so they really understand this plane. And then when something goes haywire because they weren't in the pilots, they blame it on the pilots.
David Schaper, my guest, he covers the aviation industry in Chicago for NPR. In the Midwest and pretty much
the whole country.
Look at you.
The whole world.
It is air travel.
Not,
right. All right. So are there... I think we back up a little bit and talk about this plane. You and I have talked about this before. You've been on the program. It seems like a reclamation project for Boeing because they can't really scrap it. They're going to lose money and probably lose the company. But when this kind of stuff comes out, and I mean, just everything you just told us, how are we supposed to believe that a couple of aviation regulators are going to go, you know what, it passes muster, A plus B equals C?
Well, here's the reality. Two planes crashed, but there were about 385 of these planes in service that did thousands upon thousands of flights with no trouble. And so there are circumstances in which this new flight control system that was on the plane could kick in. There is a software fix for it. It seems like there was just a simple single point of failure that they mistakenly created in this program. Now they have multiple redundancies, as is almost always the case in aviation, and so they are taking that problem seriously. It'll be interesting. I think the key thing people should watch for is not so much, well, yes, even the U.S. FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration here, because they've been beaten up pretty badly over this thing too, they're not going to just take whatever Boeing gives to them and sign off on it, as they apparently did before. They're going to really scrutinize. They've already been scrutinizing the fixes that Boeing has put into place for these planes. They're going to make sure the head of the FAA, Stephen Dixon, is a former Delta Airlines pilot himself. He's going to fly the plane himself before he signs off on a
approval. Really?
Yeah, and
kind of like an FDA person eating a steak before it goes to market.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing to watch for is what do the regulators in Europe do? What do the regulators in Canada do? What do those in Australia and China and Japan and all else all over the world? They're not inclined to just take the FAA's word anymore, and so they're going to put an extra layer of scrutiny on this plane. So if it's allowed to fly again, and when that happens, I think that there's going to be a very thorough looking over of this plane like you've never seen before. And maybe as should have been done in the very beginning. So.
David Schaefer is my guest. He covers aviation and other things for NPR. We'll take a break here. And when we come back, I want to talk about David Calhoun, because there has been a press in the aviation industry to bring an outsider in that's going to change the mm-hmm. culture at Boeing. Mm-hmm. Making the chairman of the board the CEO doesn't necessarily scream outsider. But we'll talk about what to expect from Boeing and David Calhoun as a CEO right here in Chicago at the Boeing headquarters right on the river, coming up here in 2020 and beyond. David Schaefer, my guest here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 720 WGN 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. David Schaefer from NPR is here. He covers aviation. We're talking about Boeing. The new CEO starts today, first day. I mean, I don't know if they let you in the building, but I'm sure everything went well. His swipe card worked.
I kind of feel like he's got somebody to do that kind of stuff for him. Like, do you want to chime when you get a new email, or do you want, like, somebody's taking...
No HR CEO, onboarding with him,
I don't think he's sitting in this big orientation session with 20-year-old interns. And
what do we know about him? Maybe he is. But what do we know? I mean, because the Boeing headquarters, and people know this, that, you know, it kind of shares. It's a Seattle company. Everybody knows it to be a Seattle company, but the headquarters are here right in Chicago.
Yeah, headquarters have been here since, what was that, about 2001, about almost 20 years already, which, God, makes me feel old. But, so his big legacy, I guess, if you will, most of his career, I think 25-26 years he spent at GE, General Electric, where he ultimately headed their aviation engine unit. But because he spent so much time in the upper echelon at GE, he was mentored by Jack Welch, and who is the legendary CEO and has kind of a lot of disciples throughout the business world these days. So that's kind of where he made his mark. He was actually up for the CEO job in 2006 at Boeing. They put him on the board in 2009. He has done a couple of other things. I remember where exactly he went right after that. But most recently, he's been at Blackstone, this private equity company, and as an executive there, has helped orchestrate a couple of turnarounds. He's been on Caterpillar's board for the last couple of years and helped them out of a couple of scrapes four years ago. With regulators.
Yeah, he gets around.
So he's kind of a big deal, and this is kind of like the pinnacle of his career. He's seen as somebody who, if he comes in and turns around this company, he could be, you know, hailed as one of the great CEO leaders that we've had in this country in quite some time.
Okay, so let me ask you.
Is he up to that? We don't know.
Okay, so give us a picture of Boeing, pre and post the MAX. Was the company flying high, quote-unquote, no pun intended, before all this Boeing MAX stuff?
Very much so. I mean, if you just look at it from a shareholder value perspective, their stock price has, I believe, between maybe 2015 and 2019, it doubled and then doubled again and then doubled again. It went from the mid-150s to, by March, before the second crash, after the first plane crashed, but when they said they were fixing it and there wasn't any problem anymore, and the 737 MAX was fine and still flying. They hit like $436 a share, something like that.
Wow.
I mean, just an astounding stock price. And that when that second plane crashed and it was the same problem, and they realized they didn't address the problem the way they should have, the stock price has plunged a bit, but 22% off from its high. Isn't that big of a fall, I think, when you have a faulty product that is responsible for the deaths of 346 people?
I mean, because that's
public way.
You can't have a product that crashes.
So the company had been flying high, had been, you know, from a Wall Street perspective, was a shining example. What was going on behind the scenes and has been for 20-plus years. In fact, a lot of people in Seattle Seattle, we'll say the move of the corporate headquarters, the top tier from Seattle, where it is their hub of airplane manufacturing, where if you go to the Walgreens or to the diner, the CEO may run into one of the mechanics who works on the production line. You know, I mean, it's that kind of a community. And when you separated that, there's a lot of people out there who point to the move to Chicago as a start of a big culture change. What happened just before that is when Boeing bought or merged with McDonnell Douglas, a company that was really struggling, an airplane manufacturer. They kind of swallowed them up, but kind of adopted their business culture, at least at the top level. Some of their executives ended up going up into the upper echelon of Boeing, and a lot of people point to that. Plus, and they're the ones who pushed for the move to Chicago as kind of this big change.
So, how do they bring it back? So, I kind of teased beforehand, David Calhoun. There's been a press to bring in an outsider, and I'm not sure that Calhoun's the guy because he was the chairman of the board at Boeing, and he just mentioned has this experience. So. Does there need to be a culture change, and is this the right guy to guide a culture change at Boeing?
From people I've talked to inside and outside the company, those who had worked there before but are now retired, and even some of these messages that were released from unnamed employees, there is a big culture problem. And this is a company that historically, for decades, for generations, was an engineering company, engineering focused. They were, I mean, I've talked to retired engineers who recall the days in the 80s and 90s when they would have meetings where they would basically just try to tear apart somebody else's design see if there were any holes in their plan and if there was any faults that they could find anywhere. And they would just spitball things, but just try to see if there was any possible flaw. And that's gone because the schedules are quick. They've got to get these planes cranked out. They've got to meet deadlines, and they don't want to slow that process down for maybe. One of the messages that was just released on Friday, an employee said, our culture has become one of good enough, and that's a pretty low bar. That was the quote in that message. And so there's a lot of people, both inside and outside, who feel that there needs to be a big culture change.
So
that comes from the top? But this is a guy who's been on the board for 10 years.
He's been on the board. He knows that there's been a call for outsiders. He comes in. What's his big message on the first day?
Big message that went out to employees today in an email was, my promise to you, let's work together to change our company for the better. And then goes into some detail about some of the things he wants to change. But again, you know, like when he lists his priorities for this year, 2020, rebuild trust is a big one that's up at the top, and that's certainly got to be a top priority. But focus on our values. Every day we will commit to our shared values while further strengthening our culture. But it doesn't explain what those values are, and it doesn't even acknowledge. It says, he's basically saying, we have high standards. We have a good culture. We've just got to commit to it. We have high values. We've got to commit to it. And that's not really what's happening. All these messages that were released show actually the opposite, that the culture has just the fabric of it has been kind
eroded.
Of shredded.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, at the tail end of your story today, you also talked about the outgoing CEO, right?
Yeah.
And a texter brought it in up as well, that the outgoing CEO being disgraced and bounced out after all of this going on with the Boeing MAX was given, what, $62 million in exit severance pay?
So it's not severance pay.
Okay,
this is in the SEC filings.
Right,
this is not a
right.
quote-unquote golden parachute. It's just
what we owed him.
His contract called for, the company is contractually obligated to pay him $62 million. That's not all cash. Some of it is in stocks and everything. And they made a point of saying, but we're not giving him severance pay. He's
no
not
bonuses.
Getting a bonus.
No bonuses.
And he's he returned almost $15 million in stock options. So You know, there you go. This came out on Friday, the same day that Spirit AeroSystems, one of the suppliers for Boeing, the company that makes the fuselage out in Wichita, Kansas, for the 737 MAX. It's a huge part. They're the biggest employer in Wichita. Announced 2,800 layoffs because of the halted production of the 737 MAX. So how's that for salt in the wound? You get a pink slip at work, and you flip on the radio in the car, and you hear the guy who's responsible for that, $62 million.
Unbelievable. We start where we left off, or we end where we started. You know, as we look at the regulators and the Justice Department, are there any possibilities that the CEO would be on the hook for the lives that were lost and the mistakes that pilots made in the Boeing MAX?
I don't know much about criminal law in the corporate sense, unless there's like actual, a bagman taking bribes to do something shady. I think to prove that there was criminal intent would be really hard. I think you could certainly make a case that there was maybe fraud in the way that they approached regulators, that they were not completely honest in describing the systems that were going on this plane and what they would do and what potential consequences would be. It would be hard, and to nail the CEO for all that is I think going to be difficult.
Well, he's been nailed enough because he didn't get the bonuses.
Right.
So,
right. How's your bonus?
Great.
Do you already spend it?
Yeah, no, 62 mil, right. David Schaefer, one of the best in the business, covers aviation here in Chicago for NPR and covering the first day of David Calhoun's tenure as CEO over at Boeing, of course, right here on the river in downtown Chicago. David, always a pleasure to see you, man.
Oh, it was great to come in. I enjoyed it.